And now it's time for the Sports Kings from Queens.
Hello, everyone. Today's Wednesday, December 6th. We are the Sports Kings from Queens. I'm Gino. I'm here with Darren, here with Kevin. We're talking about the world of sports. Listen to us any way you get your podcast. Please like and subscribe. Follow us on Facebook. Give us a like. Give us a share. If you want to talk to us, send some questions. Send some thoughts. We'll answer you back. We talked about the college football playoffs in a special episode Sunday night. We're going to touch on a couple of points later on. Today, we got a lot of NFL to go through. Week 13 is done. December's here. It's unbelievable. The Jets lost again. They fall to 4-8. It was a 13-8 loss against the Falcons. It was a crappy, rainy day. The Falcons did enough to get an ugly win. Boyle was bad again. We'll get to him in a couple of minutes. Simeon wound up coming in the fourth quarter. Jets had three turnovers. Jets got tons of stupid penalties. The refs were horrible in the game. It was 11 penalties, 71 yards. Other news came out after these games the last day or two. Boyle is out. Back in. Kev, why don't you take it away with the Jets?
I'm going to borrow a Mike Greenberg line. It feels like with the Jets, they are the only team that could be down 5 points and it be a two-score game with how bad this offense has been. Tim Boyle was dreadful. I mean, he seemed to be missing open receivers all day. He refused to throw the ball down the field. You know, when you watch some of the replays, that it looked like Garrett Wilson was wide open how much of the game, and he just refused to throw the ball down the field. But what do you expect from a guy who had one touchdown and 13 interceptions in his UConn career? He proved he's not an NFL quarterback. They cut him. Goodbye. And they're back to Zach. Like I said, the defense played great. You know, they had the safety early on. Funny stat, two safeties by the Jets. That's more than the number of offensive touchdowns they scored in the first quarter. I mean, you know, stats like that just show you just how incompetent this offense has been. You know, what's there to talk about during the game? Thank God I didn't have season tickets like I used to have. I would not be – I'd be the stupid one sitting out there watching this game, and thank God I don't have to do that anymore.
In the windy rain, getting wet.
Yeah, because I'd be there. I would be there. Anyway,
absolutely.
But otherwise, like I said, it was a terribly officiated game. Ron Torbert and his crew was just awful. Some of the penalties were, you know, punt return. Chaz Surratt hits the guy with the shoulder pad, and he's called for illegal use of the helmet. What? He never hit him with the helmet. DJ Reed, the ticky-tack illegal contact on the interception. That's a good overturn. I mean, it's just all over the place. It was just terrible. Like I said, the defense played well. They only gave up 13. The only touchdown drive was after the Dalvin Cook fumble that gave the Atlanta Falcons the ball near midfield. And we're moving on to Zach. Darren?
It was just putrid to watch. Actually, they came. The safety was great. Ashton Davis seems to be playing a lot better. You know, it was very interesting to watch him kind of progress a little bit. The Dalvin Cook fumble turned the damn game around. Once again, he put it on the floor, gave up a six-play, 47-yard drive from Ritter. Ritter hit Pruitt. No, I think it was a 20-yarder or so. And that put him up 7-2. And that kind of turned the game a little bit. It was just the defense gave up less than 200 yards for the game. I mean, the defense played really well. The penalties, the Chaz Surratt one was a joke at the end of the half to help them get into field goal range. They convert on a fourth down and they commit two back-to-back false starts. You can't make this crap up. This team's awful. But the big thing that happened in this game is the Falcons fumbled three times and recovered all three of them. The Jets fumbled four times and lost two of them, plus Boyle threw a nice pick. Simeon, who I was waiting to see him get a chance, and he really didn't. I mean, they put him in one quarter. But his release seems very slow. It seems like he's trying to get the ball out. His hand never comes forward. I don't know if it's that he's very slow, but it's just one of those things. Of course, the dog is barking as my daughter walks in the house. Just one of those fun things that happen here in the house. But shut up. But it's just one of those things that just happens here. But at the same time, the Falcons didn't do much. Ritter, who usually is a turnover machine on the road or even at home, didn't turn the ball over at all. It was just one of those moments. It just was not a good performance yet again. This team just settles for field goals. They don't try for touchdowns. Boyle refused to throw the ball down the field. So did Semien. And, you know, when you have that type of situation, you're not going to win the game. Gee.
Yeah. The only additional point after this now is that Zach Wilson is back in. They cut Tim Boyle. And Zach is back in the game. Zach is going to start, obviously, over Travis Semien. And we'll see what happens with this team. This week, they have the Texans at home. So we'll see what happens.
Listen, they're going to go in as an underdog at home yet again.
Yep.
Yeah. Okay. Any other jet points, guys? Okay.
Not really. I mean, the fumbles were the big thing. The Zach drama's here. The defense got to be frustrated as hell. Salah and Douglas should both be gone. I don't know what else we can really say about this team.
All right. Giants were on the bye. Only news that came out this week is that Tyrod Taylor is back. However, DeVito will continue to be the starter. Giants have a Monday night game at home against the Packers coming up. And I guess we'll go around the NFL. Do you guys have any Giant points, guys?
I was just going to say, well-deserved, DeVito should be starting. We all know what Tyrod Taylor is. He's a career backup, excellent backup. But you know what you've got with him. You know, now's the time for DeVito to play the last four or five games, unless he really just craps out where it's embarrassing to watch him play. He should be the starter the rest of the year. Let's see if he's got any NFL ability over the longer term.
Listen, if he does anything at all, it'll keep him in the league for 6, 7, 8 years as a backup, and and it gives him a career.
Yep. All right. As we've done the last couple of weeks, we're going to go through the playoff seedings. We'll go through games in that order. We'll start at the AFC. Right now, Miami's in the one slot at 9-3. They blew out Washington 45-15. Tyreek Hill was just a monster, 5 for 157 and 2 touchdowns. Devin Achane had 73 yards and 2 touchdowns. Mostert also had a touchdown. They just rolled right over Washington. They're at the top. They also have a 2-game lead at the moment in the AFC East. Baltimore's in the two. I'm sorry, Kev.
Three game.
You're right. In the two spot is Baltimore at 9-3. They were on the bye. The three spot is now Kansas City. They lost to Green Bay 27-19. Mahomes was 21 for 33 with 210 yards and a touchdown. Darren, Kansas City.
Love looked great, by the way, right? I mean, all of a sudden it looks like he's kind of clicked it on. Christian Watkins is catching everything thrown in his direction. He got hurt at the end. Hopefully it's nothing serious.
Well, Love had three touchdowns in that game.
Exactly. The penalties at the end of this game were horrific, or lack thereof. They called in both ways. Mahomes is running. He's still in bounds. He gets hit with the shoulder. They call it a roughing penalty. And they gave the Chiefs 15 yards. That was a joke. He was in bounds. What are you supposed to do? If he's a runner, and it's not like Mahomes hasn't scrambled, it's not like he's a guy that's a statue. You can't call that.
And as a defender, that's a hit that you're trying to make to either A, knock him backwards so that he's got four progress, keep him in bounds. To try to keep the clock moving. It was the right move on the defender's part.
He has to make that hit. You know, he was still in bounds. That made Pacheco throw the punch after the pick that was nullified. So they lost the 15 yards back. So it worked out, but it's not supposed to work out like that. Then they throw the ball to Valdes-Scantling, who would have probably dropped it anyway. But he got mugged. I mean, that was about as egregious a pass interference as you'll see since the NFC Championship game between the Saints and the Rams. That's how bad this one was. He grabbed him with an arm. He hugged him with the other. No call. I was like, wow, how did that happen? And the last play, yeah, Kelce got pushed. But you don't expect to get a call on the Hail Mary, so you don't really think much of that one. He did get pushed, as they pointed out. But the Valdes-Scantling one was horrible. The officiating is just getting worse and worse. I know I've said it before. Full-time officials, younger guys. Listen, I don't need overweight women running in there trying to set up the line marker that are missing things. I don't need overweight guys trying to run down the field and trip over their own 2 feet as they try to keep up with a speedy receiver. Let's get some athletes out there that can do this job. It's getting to be pretty sad, and it's almost every single game. The Chief Packer one, because it was the only one on at the time, it stands out. It was both calls, I think, were egregious. You know, I mean, what are you supposed to do with Mahomes? Just let him run as far as he wants, and when he decides to slide, you let him slide? No, you got to hit him a little bit. You got to try to drive him backwards to keep the clock running. There's nothing wrong with what that hit was, and the Valdez-Scantling play was really horrible.
Oh, it was horrible.
Just a great game for the Packers. They deserve to win. They won by 8. They were the better team on the field. Not trying to take it away, but at the end of the game, I thought it was horrible.
Okay. In the 4 spot is Jacksonville. They lost to Cincinnati 34-31 in overtime. Lawrence went down with
an ankle injury. They lost a lot more than that.
Lawrence went down with an ankle injury in the 4th. For Cincinnati, Jake Browning, 354-1. He also had a touchdown on 22 yards. Cincinnati's at 6-6. They're on the outside looking in still. Kev?
They're talking high ankle sprain for Lawrence. It's a miracle. That's all he had. I mean, that looked ugly when it happened. I thought it was a torn ligament, torn this, torn that. Now, my only question is, if he's not back for the playoffs, does the NFL playoff committee knock him out of the playoffs?
Because they should vote him out because they're not as good without him.
That's right.
Even though C.J. Beathard was 9-for-10 in the game. I thought Trey Hendrickson looked unbelievably classy, kneeling down next to him as soon as the play was over. It was like one of those things you don't see often. He tried to help him up. He went right back down. Then he went and knelt in prayer right away. I don't know if he's a highly religious guy or whatever the story is, but you don't often see that. I mean, you'll see players kneel, but he seemed like he was the first guy to kneel. I mean, he didn't want to see a star player get knocked out of the league, and I thought that was great. It was a really well-played game, actually. Cincinnati and Jacksonville offenses both played well.
Kevin? Great game. And, you know, going back to Hendrickson, you know, I hope he doesn't have that, you know, oh, now that he shows he's a good guy, let's have social media look for any misdeed he's ever done in his life to show what a hypocrite he is. Because you know that's kind of thing. Because, you know, with nowadays, that's going to happen. It's just...
Okay, in the 5...
You're right. I didn't think about that, but you're right.
In the 5 spot is Pittsburgh. They're at 7-5. They lost in a double rain-delayed game against Arizona, 24-10. They also lost Kenny Pickett late in the first half. They're not sure how long this is going to be at the moment. Could be season. We're not sure at the moment. They fall to 7-5. The 6th spot is Cleveland. They also lost to the Rams, 36-19, despite 254 yards and 2 TDs from Flacco. Cleveland was held to 87 yards on the ground. Darren?
Well, first on the Steeler game, Connor goes back to Pittsburgh and has a really nice game. He scores 2 touchdowns, gets over 100 yards. Pickett to Trubisky, not that Pickett's that good. You just don't believe that Trubisky's ever going to lead the team to victory. Tomlin never loses, though, so that's going to be interesting how they finish out. The whole division now, you know, they Cincinnati, quarterback gone. Pittsburgh, quarterback gone. Cleveland, quarterback gone. You know, I mean, it just leaves Lamar standing in that division. And they have the lead, and it's showing right now. As far as the Cleveland game, you know, they had a chance to tie it up. It was 2019, kicking the extra point. He missed the extra point. Hopkins missed the extra point. They get, you know, the Rams come down, and the Rams look pretty good in this game offensively. But then Flacco throws the pick, and that kind of put the end of it. They scored the last 16 points. The game was much closer than it looked. It was 2019. They made it 36-19. I thought Cleveland fought pretty hard for a guy that's a statue back there. I thought Flacco looked good. The offensive line gives you time. He could pick them apart.
Okay. In the 7 spot at the moment is Indianapolis at 7-5. They beat Tennessee 31-28 in overtime. This is after Tennessee kicked an overtime field goal. And then Indianapolis came back with a touchdown in overtime to win. The Colts in this game blocked 2 consecutive punts. One of them was for an 18-yard touchdown in the 3rd quarter. Darren, Indianapolis?
Yeah, Titans special teams coach fired after the game after the 2 block punts. The kicker almost got killed. I think his leg was snapped off. You know, the thing was – they blocked the 2nd one. They got tackled at the 6. They didn't get in. They had to settle for a field goal. That's what allowed this game to go to overtime. Also, Titans missed an extra point, also allowed the game to go to overtime. So there was a couple of different scenarios. Each team should have won this game in regulation. Kev?
Plus the rare, you know, after the block punt touchdown, we had the defensive 2-point conversion, the interception return. So all of a sudden, you know, a 22-17 lead becomes 22-19 on the defensive 2-point.
It was one of those games you didn't expect to be a fun game to watch. It was a very fun game to watch.
Okay, on the outside, looking in at the playoffs at the moment are four teams. Houston, Denver, Buffalo, who had the bye, and Cincinnati, we talked about. The other game, Houston, they beat Denver 22-17. Stroud threw 274 and one. Nico Collins had a touchdown and 191 yards. Houston loses Tank Dell, rookie Tank Dell wide receiver, to a season-ending broken leg. In the game, Russell Wilson threw an INT in the end zone with 9 seconds left to secure the win for Houston. Anything on the anything on this game? Yeah,
he threw three picks in that game. I mean, Russell Wilson threw three picks for the game. The Texans looked like they were in control. The Denver fought back. Then it kind of went back and forth a little bit. The Texans were able to hold on. It's two good teams. Nico Collins is the one on that team. I mean, I know a lot of people look at Tank Dell like, oh, he's having a great year. Nico Collins has been the number one all season. So it's not like they lost their one, but they definitely lost someone that was making a difference, a speedster that was getting up there. Noah Brown is back, though, for that team, so they are established. The Texans right now have an opening to win this division with the injury to Lawrence. I mean, right now they're looking at a road game at the Jets like it's nothing right now. I don't think they think they're going to score a ton of points, but I know that they think they're going to shut them out. So that's the Texans, even though they're outside looking in, that could reverse to the Jacksonville Jaguars being outside looking in really quick.
Yeah, I mean, the playoff picture on the bottom half of the AFC probably is going to flip five or six more times in the next 3 or 4 weeks because all these teams are within a game or two of one another. They're all going to start flip-flopping as we go through the season. And some of these teams are actually going to play each other, which is one of your points that you said the other day, Darren, you know?
You got the Bills and the Chiefs this week. I mean, just thinking of games that are going to happen, of two teams that are both going to kind of need the game a little bit.
Yeah, Cleveland plays Jacksonville this week. I mean, you got a lot of these teams going to be playing each other now. So, all right, NFC. So the one seed and the two seed basically played each other this week. Philadelphia's with the losses at 10-2. San Francisco's at 9-3. San Francisco routes the Eagles 42-19. After not scoring on their first two possessions, San Francisco then scored on the next six possessions. Purdy, 3-14 and four. Debo had three touchdowns. They held San Francisco held them to 46, the Eagles to 46 yards on the ground. Darren?
The thing about this game is the Eagles went up 6-0, settled for field goals twice. Usually this team gets into the end zone. They're usually not that weak with settling for field goals. But the 49ers D stiffen. If they go up 14-0, there's a completely different game. But they went up 6-0. And before you know it, it's 7-6 49ers, and it looked like they were being outplayed and were up a point. The other thing about this game, we had Greenlaw against Big Dom on the sideline. We had that little fight from the Philly head of security. Why is the head of security getting involved with the players on the field? I do not know. Just one of those things that you don't often see during an NFL game. You know, I don't think I've ever seen it. I don't know, Kev.
You know, there's a bit of a scuffle starts to break out, and Big Dom decides, I'm going to get in Greenlaw's face. Rather than turn around and hold or make sure Swift and my Eagles players are back in the way and keep them from being in trouble, he approaches and puts his hands on Greenlaw first. And that's when Greenlaw responded.
I agree. Greenlaw was not in the wrong. Jerry Rice came out and said, I would have punched him in the face.
Yeah. It was a nice suplex, too, by Greenlaw and Swift.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah, absolutely. Listen, I'm not going to say who started the fight. I'm just going to say I didn't watch it that closely. I was too napping with the Greenlaw versus Big Dom. That's what I had.
But like you said, Darren, you know, that first quarter, -6 yards on the two drives for San Fran. Like I said, when it's 6-0, you go, yeah, this is not good for Philly.
Yeah.
No, absolutely. They should have been up at least 10, at if least not 10. 14.
Yep.
And Philly this week gets Dallas, and that's going to be big-time implications as we start getting into this. In the three spot right now is Detroit at 9-3. They hang on to beat New Orleans 33-28, despite blowing a 21-0 lead in the first 7 minutes of the game. Sam Laporta, a career high of 9 receptions for 140 yards and a touchdown. Darren?
24-7 at the half. The Saints fought back, but they just couldn't get over the hump. I had them on the money line along with Arizona, so I was not happy. But at the same time, interesting cryptic message from Michael Thomas, ripping, basically not naming him, but ripping Derek Carr, saying that the quarterbacks who's getting the players injured because he cannot see the field. Then he took down the tweet. But just one of those things, a little infighting going on in New Orleans as Atlanta with the commanding, what, two-game lead or a game-and-a-half lead at 6-6, yeah, whatever it is. Or is it just one game? Is it just one? They're 5-7?
They're 5-7.
One-game lead. But either way, they have the lead. Yeah.
Atlanta's in the four spot. They're at 6-6. We talked about them earlier because they played the Jets. Mm-hmm. In the five spot is Dallas. They're at 9-3. After trailing in the fourth, they wound up coming back and beating Seattle 41-35. Dak threw for three touchdowns. The big wide receiver game out of CD Lamb, 116 yards and a touchdown. Darren, Dallas?
Makes me a little nervous about Dallas in this game. I know they came back and won it. Is that when they play against a good team, you know, they seem to not – they haven't beaten a good team. This is the best team that they've beaten all season, so to speak. And Seattle came in kind of limping, but they put up a lot of points against what's supposed to be a really strong Dallas D. You know, but give them credit. You know, Dak played well, Lamb played well, the other side, Geno played well, and then Metcalf played well.
Yeah,
I mean, it was a really well-played game. It was actually a fun game to watch. The one thing that stood out to me was after the game, a local SNY columnist named Connor Hughes showed Jamal Adams get beat by Ferguson on the touchdown, and he put a little thing said "yikes" on it. So Jamal Adams comes back, shows a picture of the guy's wife, and writes "yikes" back. That's what we're coming down to. We're bringing families into it. Jamal, grow up, okay? You got beat on a play. The guy's doing his job. You may not like that you got criticized, but you got beat for a touchdown. He put up a word like "yikes." Now you're gonna insult the guy's wife. I mean, now you're getting to be, you know, you're not a rookie. You're not in your second year. You're in your sixth year in the damn league. Grow up.
Yeah, I mean, the whole game, I think nearest defender, he gave up like four catches for 100 yards and one or two touchdowns. Yeah. I mean, he had a terrible game. And Cleet Blakeman, we saw too much of him tonight, that night, too.
Oh, that was God, awfully he killed that game.
10 penalties for 130 yards for Seattle, 9 penalties for 127 yards for Dallas. Never before in the history of the NFL had a team committed 125 yards of penalties and not punted. Neither team punted in that game. They brought that up, that stat on Thursday night. You know, like Al Michaels said to Herbie there, maybe we should just leave and let Blakeman call the rest of the game. I mean, it was just ridiculous.
Yeah, they were blatantly frustrated. Al Michaels was pretty rough about it.
And I like listening to Michaels, and I like Herb Street. I like that combination on Amazon.
I feel like this was the first week I listened to a Jet game where the announcers didn't go out of the way to insult the team. I felt like Michaels did it. I think even Herb Street did it. I think they all take cheap shots. I know we're a joke of a franchise, but as a fan, I just want you to call the damn game. I don't need you to give me your analysis of it.
I like
in other games where they're not doing the Jet games. I got to be honest.
And speaking of the Jet game, like you said, on Sunday, you know, we watched Kenny Albert and Jonathan Vilma did the game, and I thought they did a pretty good job. They didn't kill the Jets all game.
They tried to keep it positive.
Yeah,
and when Kenny stepped out of line, Jonathan brought him back.
Yep.
All right, in the NFC, in the sixth spot is Minnesota at 6-6. They were on a bye. In the seventh spot at the moment is Green Bay at 6-6. We talked about them. They wound up beating Kansas City 27-19. Outside looking in is Seattle at 6-6. They lost to Dallas. Despite, by the way, we talked about Geno a little bit. They had 406 yards of offense in that game. Big offensive game for them, too.
Charbonnet started coming on in the second half, too. Charbonnet played well in that game.
Yeah. And the Rams are at 6-6. They beat Cleveland 36-19. Stafford threw for three touchdowns. Rams win their third straight. They have Baltimore coming up, and then they play the Commanders, the Saints, and the Giants. So they could get a couple – after the Ravens, they can get a couple of wins. And then the last game of the season, they wind up playing San Francisco. So you got – bookend bad games.
Who may or may not need the game, by the way. So
yeah, exactly. Yeah. Could get interesting with the Rams. Darren?
Just one other point in the NFL I wanted to bring up. Hayden Hurst, tight end for the Carolina Panthers, apparently has post-traumatic amnesia after the head hit that he got against Chicago. I haven't heard this in an NFL game from a player.
Yeah.
He's in a bad way right now. I mean, usually these things are kind of, I guess, kept secret. You know, we know more about him than we knew about DeMar Hamlin when he went down. But at the same time, just a sad note for a guy that's been a pretty good tight end, you know, through the years in Baltimore and, you know, Atlanta, Carolina. So shame to hear about that. I noticed you didn't touch on the Chargers 6-0 over the Pats game.
I said that was a joke.
I said that as a joke.
Bad football. I did not, even though I had the Chargers -4.5 and won that bet. So
congratulations, buddy.
I got one other thing for you guys, and that is I heard Chris Mad Dog Russo talking about hopefully trying to put enough pressure with some of these guys to change the playoff format. And I just want to run this by you, where everything would stay the same as it is right now, where your four division winners get in and three wildcard spots, except once you have those seven teams, you basically reseed them on record. Any thoughts? So Atlanta at 6-6 isn't going to get a home playoff game in week one because there are other teams that'll, you know, Dallas will basically be 9-3 at that point, you know, at this point. So what are your thoughts on that? Anything?
Kev, you have a thought or not really?
No, not really.
I actually don't like it that much. Yeah.
We've seen it this way for so long. You know, Seattle a couple years ago, under .500, getting the home win.
Against the Saints
in the playoffs.
That was the start of beast mode. Remember that?
Yep.
Yeah.
Marshawn Lynch. I don't know. I have no problem with division winners. He's getting a home game. It doesn't bother me as much.
I kind of thought it was interesting. I think it would. I mean, your reward for winning your division is you're in the playoffs. You still got a shot, but you're just not getting the home. You know, if your record isn't better than three of the wild card teams, you're not getting the round one. You know. That would be the only thing at this point. So I don't know.
I'm not against it either, by the way. I'm just saying it doesn't matter to me either way.
Yeah. Just I don't care one way or the other.
Yeah. Yep. All right. We'll come back to NFL at the end for our NFL picks. Kev? Yeah,
the only other game you didn't mention, Tampa Bay 21, Carolina 18. The only reason why I mentioned it, Mike Evans eclipsed 1,000 yards for the 10th straight year. Only Jerry Rice with 11 has done it more consecutive years. I mean, that if you forget how good Mike Evans is sometimes.
Yeah.
Just he's year after year good. Cranking out.
Well, you know what? It's bookend because he played with bad quarterbacks and then he played with Brady and then he's back to semi bad quarterbacks again, you know?
Come on, Baker Mayfield.
We all wanted Baker to be good. He just isn't.
Yep. All right. NFL will get to the picks later on in the show. We'll go around, talk a little sports going on. Darren, want to start us off with a little baseball talk? What's going on in baseball? Anything going on in New York baseball?
I mean, the only thing is that we're waiting on this Mario Soto. I'm aging myself. Waiting on the Soto trade from the Pods to the Yanks. All these different things that are going on. And this deal is rumored to be close, but nothing has happened yet. You know, the Yankees would be sending as many as 6 or 7 prospects over, or players and prospects combined, over to the Padres for a 1-year rental. As a Yankee fan, I'm kind of excited about seeing Soto in the lineup every day around with Judge. I think that combination could be really lethal. I think the Yankees need that left-handed bat, short porch guy that can own the yard at the same point in time, walks a lot like Judge. The two of them will combine for 250 to 300 walks, too. So a lot of good things to like about this if it does come true. Just waiting for it to be finalized. I heard that they might be onto physicals now, but who knows? Pretty excited about that. As a Yankee fan, we have to do something. Yeah, as a Yankee fan, we got to do something.
What do you guys think of the Verdugo trade?
I liked it.
Verdugo?
Verdugo is like, you know, when I get dizzy on heights. Yeah. But Verdugo was a pretty good player. Listen, it gives him another outfield bat. Judge's health is not always the best. I think that they needed to have another bat in that outfield.
You know, you look at his numbers the last 2-3 years, he has not hit lefties well. But a little under the radar thing, they picked up Oscar Gonzalez on waivers from Cleveland.
Yes, they did.
2022, he had a nice year. You know, hit about .290 in about 95 games. Last year, he regressed. But, you know, if he's a little bit of a platoon type with Verdugo, you know, especially if you get Soto, you know, they had no production from left field last year. If you get anything from them, a platoon there would be helpful.
And also rumored to be in the Soto trade is Trent Grisham. So that would help your outfield depth as well.
Yeah.
Look, I like the Verdugo trade. I don't think it's a bad trade. I kind of wish it would have been somebody else to could have played center field more often. I checked in 618 games, he's played 118 in center field, Verdugo. So he has played it enough that, you know, he's not a stranger in center field, but at the same time, the majority of the his play is basically in left or right. So we'll see.
You got to realize that they're banking on Dominguez getting back here sometime in the summer to be that center field guy, rather, or Judge could be that guy as well. So there's a couple of different guys that can play that position.
Yeah.
But I get the point. I like the trade for Verdugo. Kev, what'd you think about the Kelenic trade? Between, you know, is he going to be a Met killer now that he's a Brave?
Seattle and Atlanta. Yes. I mean, another salary dump by the Mariners. They made the trade last week, got rid of Suarez. Pure salary dump. They not only was it Kelenic, but it was also Marco Gonzalez. You know, last year was a down year, but before that, he was a pretty solid starter. Braves turned around and traded him to the Pirates for a player to be named. But obviously, they wanted Kelenic. They wanted to see if he could harass the Mets for the next 10 years.
The winter meetings kind of came in and out with not much, I thought. I was hoping for a little more excitement. Ohtani still is nowhere. But Kev, what about Uncle Steve flying to Japan? Tell us about this.
Uncle Stevie and Stearns both made the trip to Japan to go see Yamamoto. You know, when you've got, you know, how much money in the world, you can make a trip overnight to Japan and try to woo him to come to the Mets. You know, let's make it a package deal. Let's get him and a manga over from Japan. Put them with Senga. Then you know you need a six-man rotation.
It's an interesting thing what happened with Yamamoto, because they've went over there. Nobody really knew about it. And people are mostly listing the Yankees as the favorite. But you got to figure that either one of two things happened. Either you know, they gave Cohen permission to come on over so they could talk to him about it, or it was like this one last ditch effort to try to sit there and make sure he doesn't go to the Yankees. And we have no idea which one of it is. No. And we don't even have a hint of what it is. No. So, but this is, it's not often the Yankees and the Mets are head to head for a guy. Usually one goes and the other doesn't as much. This is one where Cashman has come out publicly talking about how he wants him and he's going to do everything he can to get him. And Cohen flew to Japan. So, I know along with Stearns, but I mean, but that's Uncle Steve's dime, I believe. You know, I think it's going to be cool to see. Ohtani looks like, I don't know, the Blue Jays entered out of nowhere. The Angels are still around. The Dodgers look like the front runner. A lot of stuff going on there with Ohtani.
Yeah. I got one other signing that happened today, by the way. Apparently, the Baltimore Oriole front office was actually listening to things we said at the trade deadline last year. And they finally added an extra reliever, signing Kimbrel to come on now. So Kimbrel will join that pen, give them a little bit more depth, which is what we basically said at the trade deadline last year. Could you go get a starter? Could you go get a reliever? Darren?
Yeah, I think that Kimbrel could be the father of some of the kids that are on that.
Oh, absolutely.
On the current pen right now.
Absolutely.
But it'd be, listen, the hot stove part of baseball is always one of the most fun parts of the year. Then it becomes opening day, and then it becomes, you know, first month, and then it becomes like September. That's how kind of baseball rolls. And you go through the, you know, you're watching it all year long, but it's the grind has gotten less and less now that there's so many more playoff teams to it. But at the same time, yeah, I love this hot stove talk. You want to see who ends up where? Fun stuff.
Right. What do we got? What do you got for NHL? You got any NHL points, Darren?
Well, Patrick Kane signed. He's going to be a Red Wing. That was kind of exciting, you know. And Yari scored the first ever goal by a Penguins goalie. I thought that was pretty cool. And the Rangers look great. They're playing really good hockey. The Islanders need a coaching change. I'm sorry. It's time to move on. This is a defensive-minded team that's blowing leads. That can't be. They need a new. They have the talent. They need a new on the defensive side. I know they're losing Pelech, who to me is their best defensive defenseman, but at the same time, they need a different voice. I don't know what you guys think. You guys are the Islander fans.
They've been playing better. They were 5-1-2 in the last eight, but you know, like last night losing to San Jose, I get the feeling they've blown a 3-goal third period lead 3 or 4 times this year.
Yep.
Can't happen. And really, when this is a team that doesn't score, only three teams have scored less goals than the Islanders in the NHL this year. And when you do have that three goal lead in third, you have to hold on to that. Come on.
Yeah, against a bad team.
That means you put up at least three or four goals.
I wouldn't be opposed to a coaching change at this point.
You know, Lou, he'll change the coach.
Yeah.
I mean, I just think it's about time. I just think you got to get a new voice in there. The team's got a little too much talent to be playing this poorly, in my opinion.
And the Devils are, you know, they're 4-1 the last five. They went through their slump where they lost 6-7, but they've bounced back. For them, they're the opposite problem. They are 6th in the league in goals for, but they're negative goal differential.
Yeah, their power play's like at a 34% clip or something like that. It's ridiculous. And when they lost a lot of those games with Hughes out, and they still have other injuries, but Hughes is the star.
I mean, Hughes is 33 points in 18 games.
He's ridiculous. I mean, he's fun to watch. I got to be honest. Jack Hughes is a player. His brother's pretty good, too, and they played against the other brother last night in Vancouver. So all three of them were in the same arena at the same time. I thought it was pretty cool.
But the one side I don't think I've ever seen this bad, Timo Meier, 16 games, 5 goals, 6 assists, 11 points, you know, helping out, you know, there's a middle of the road forward. They get a 15 in 16 games.
That's hard to do.
Especially when you have that many goals. Wow. Yeah. All right, let's head over to NBA. Kev, NBA, couple of NBA points.
Well, if anybody's interested in the in-season tournament, we are down to the semifinals. Indy beat Boston. Milwaukee beat the Knicks, 146-122. So they'll face off out west. New Orleans beat Sacramento. The Lakers last night squeezed by Phoenix, 106-103. Very questionable, you know, did the ball come loose? But, you know, LeBron called timeout, so we've got to grant him the timeout to save possession for the Lakers.
Kev, tell us, do you like LeBron?
Oh, I love him. Here's the biggest problem to me with the in-season tournament. So the Knicks do enough to get the wild card spot in the tournament. And their reward are two games. They get to play Milwaukee in the first round. They lose. And because Boston lost, their other extra game is now against Boston. Just for a comparison, just to look at the Nets, their two extra games, because they did not qualify, were the 9-10 Hawks, which is a close game. They're down by 3 with a minute left. Oh, they're up by 3 with a minute left tonight.
Okay.
And then they get to play the 3-16 Washington Wizards. Tell me, was it worth making the in-season tournament for the Knicks to get to play the Bucks and the Celtics? This could cost them in the long run.
This is a waste of time for everybody associated with this stupid in-season tournament.
It is. I'm not huge NBA to begin with, but this, I think, is just the biggest waste of time. It's just unbelievable. We talked about a couple weeks ago when point differential is your tiebreaker. You have a big problem with this tournament right off the bat. So, all right, Darren, college basketball? I'm sorry, Kev, go ahead.
One other quick point. The Detroit Pistons. Awesome. Started off the season 2-1. Here we are after losing tonight. They are now 2-19.
Yes, for November. For November.
18-game losing streak for your Detroit Pistons.
Whew. Far cry from the bad boys.
Yep.
Wow. All right. Moving over, college basketball. Darren, a couple of points on college basketball.
Yeah, just a couple of things. A couple of real major upsets have happened over the last week. Duke lost twice in a row. They lost to Arkansas and Georgia Tech, which, you don't expect. At the same time, Villanova finishes last in the Big Five tournament. They lose to both St. Joe's and Drexel. Not exactly what you expect. Northwestern goes and beats number one Purdue. Mississippi State was up 59-48 on Southern with 4 to go. They gave up the last 12 points of the game and lost 60-59. Wisconsin ripped Marquette, who's ripping Texas right now, or was ripping Texas last I checked anyway. Virginia beat up Texas A&M, who's ranked 14th. And then you had a couple of really good ones. Really, really great game with Kansas outlasting UConn, giving UConn their first loss in forever. And North Carolina holding off Tennessee the other night. And then UConn ended up beating North Carolina last night. So lots of interesting things happening in the world of college basketball. One of them, next year's top recruits, the number one recruit in the country is a kid named Cooper Flagg. And he's already committed to Duke. And, they're already starting to look and throw money at him. He's going to be a superstar kind of kid. The number two and three players next year are two kids named Dylan Harper and Ace Bailey, who have both committed to Rutgers. In my life, wow. I would never have thought that Rutgers, as Kevin roots for South Carolina, they came back here and did this game against Clemson. But I would have never thought that Rutgers would get the two and three players. Now, Dylan Harper, he signed today. Ace Bailey was already there. He's the three. Dylan Harper is the son of Ron Harper Sr. And the brother of Ron Harper who played there. So it was between Duke, Kansas, and Rutgers. And I can't remember the last time Rutgers won that battle. So this is what's happening in the wonderful world of college basketball. A new team that might have two players just for 1 year. But even still, you haven't seen Rutgers in this ever be able to compete with the big boys. So this is kind of a fun one. I just thought it was an interesting thing to add. One other point I want to bring up, and just because it's controversial. So I'm watching the TCU-Georgetown game the other day, as one does, And game's tied. TCU was up big. Georgetown stormed back, took the lead. TCU tied it up. Georgetown gets kind of – Epps is the best player on Georgetown, drives to the hole, gets kind of a phantom call with 2.9 to go. Gets to the line, hits both foul shots. TCU has no timeouts left. They throw the ball down. DJ Miller down the court. He catches it just a little bit beyond half court. Turns, fires, dribbles, turns, fires, and banks it home to win it by one. Now, the ball was clearly off first, right? So it was good. But they go to review it. On the review, you can see that he steps out of bounds. But because they didn't review that or call that on the court as the review, they could not overturn it, and the basket counted. Now, if you're on – now, this is the opposite of what replay should do.
Run that through me one more time.
So he takes the shot, but before he shoots the ball, he steps out of bounds.
On the side?
On the sideline. He steps out of bounds on the sideline. So, but because they didn't call it on the court, they can't review that that's what they're reviewing. They didn't see it, so they bank it home – and they can only review the time. So even though they know he stepped out of bounds, they have to give him the basket. Kev?
If they called on the court that he stepped out of bounds and he didn't, that's reviewable because the call was out of bounds.
Exactly.
But the fact that there was no call.
Exactly.
That's not reviewable.
Well, the fact is that replay is supposed to get the call right. Now, I'm rooting for TCU. You guys know that. But the fact of the matter is that Georgetown got robbed.
Wow,
I mean, he stepped out of bounds.
That's crazy.
It's a miracle bank shot of bank shots on the road, the whole thing. I didn't know he stepped out of bounds because the court's so close sometimes that we can't see it from the camera angle. But you show it, and it's not really close. He's clearly bounds. And they didn't call it on the court. And because of that, they could not review that. So they go to the coach, who's the coach from Providence, and I'm blanking on his name right now, the guy that just moved over there. That was at Providence for all those years. The guy missing the hair in the back. Why am I forgetting his name?
Cooley?
Cooley. And Cooley's losing his mind that they can't overturn the call. He stepped out of bounds. Sorry, we can't change the call. They have to do something about the way replay is working because it's supposed to get the call right.
We can spend 10 minutes in a college basketball game trying to decide if there's 0.3 or 0.7 when the ball goes to the net. But something this blatant can't be reviewed.
Wow.
I mean, you can't make it up. You just can't. I found it to be – that was egregious. I was like, oh, my – and I was rooting for TC. I was excited when he hit the shot, the whole thing. Then I'm like, oh, he's out of bounds. They're going to reverse it. Nope.
Yeah.
It's like,
wow.
What? I was just stunned by it.
That's crazy.
That's what I have for college hoops. I don't know if and Clemson and South Carolina, the two undefeated teams from the Palmetto State, are in a battle. Right now I think it's a 4-point lead for Clemson on my screen. You might have it closer, Kev.
No, Clemson's pulling away a bit here.
Yeah, well, you might be a little ahead of me. So anyway, but that's what I have right now in college hoops. Jake.
All right, Darren, we're going to go back in time a little bit, and we have a college football point to
come. I'm going to ask you guys a question. I just want you to be honest with me. When you think about Florida State, is there any player that ever comes to your mind?
Charlie Ward.
Okay. To me, Deion Sanders comes to mind.
Yeah.
Okay? To me, Deion.
Yeah.
So I ask you, if Deion Sanders is coaching Florida State, do they not get into the playoff?
Well, listen here, Stephen A. Were you listening to Stephen A? Because that was
no, no, I didn't know that part. I read something about it, but I didn't hear it.
Yes,
I didn't know. I didn't know it was a report. Somebody posted it. They must have reposted what he wrote. I didn't know that.
Yes, Stephen A. during First Take the other morning was talking about it, saying, you know, if Deion was a coach, he wanted to go to Florida State. If he was a coach there, they get in because it's Deion.
Well, the second question is if Bobby Bowden is the coach.
Oh, Bowden gets more respect than Norville.
Do you think that they get the bid if Bowden's the coach? Let's take out Deion. I was thinking – I saw somebody write it. I thought it was an interesting point. But then I was thinking about Bowden. G, do you think they get in if they get Bowden or Deion as the coach?
No.
You just don't think that they would stick with the committee?
I think they do.
I do, too.
Bowden may be
Deion more likely than Bowden, but I think they do get in.
Now, here's my point. You've gone through and they've decided that Texas and Alabama were more deserving than Florida State because without a quarterback, they can't play. So they've got them ranked 5. Now, should Georgia be ahead of them based on who's available and the better team? Should Georgia be ranked ahead of Florida State using the same criteria they use there?
I agree. I do. Well, to me, Georgia is better than Alabama and Texas. They should have gotten a chance to defend their title, my opinion.
So move them up to 5. Now let's look behind them. Ohio State, a one-loss Ohio State team, healthy, only loss was at Michigan. Are they a better team right now than Florida State?
According to the criteria they gave us, yes.
So should the 5-6 matchup in the other big bowl game, should that be 5 Georgia and 6 Ohio State, and Florida State should be relegated to some other bowl game because they don't have Travis?
By the way they did the committee?
By their logic, right?
By their logic, yes. And now, unfortunately, with the way college football is done, Nix is not going to play against Liberty.
Yeah.
And Liberty's all upset, but they're like, why would he do that? And a lot of guys aren't going to play.
Oh, yeah.
Caleb Williams isn't going to play. A lot of these guys are not going to play in these bowl games, which makes them not mean anything, to be honest with you. And the transfer portal's already open, and guys are already moving around, and they haven't even played their bowl games yet.
Yeah.
This is becoming bigger deal than anything I've seen. College football, as we know it, is starting to become rich teams versus poor teams. And the head of the NCAA came out with something. And I don't know if it's bad or good, but came out with the idea that each player, each team should be able to pay half their players, I think it was $30,000 or $40,000 each. So everybody makes the same amount of money. Half their players can get the same amount of money. So it doesn't become a rich versus poor. It doesn't become where, a guy that you've recruited and you've developed and turned them into something now leaves for the money by going somewhere else, i.e. Sam Hartman, who went 4 years at Wake and got the money to go to Notre Dame. And that's just one example, but there's a million of them. Do you think it should be a fair playing field, or do you think NIL and every player gets whatever they can? Does it matter if it's fair?
I'm going to say it should be fair, but, if it's half the – so half your team can get $30,000 just as a number thrown out there. Mm-hmm. What about the other half of the team? Do you get nothing, or is that
– he didn't add another thing, so I don't know what the other half was going to be. But say the other half of them get 15. Say the other half of them get 20. Maybe it's 40 and 20, say.
Yeah.
And, you got guys that are $20,000 guys that could be trade up and become $40,000 guys somewhere else. But they're taking a $40,000 spot from somebody.
It helps the level of the field a little bit, but
I just think it's weird. I mean, that the way they're doing it.
It's a big mess. The whole thing's a mess now also. I mean,
It's going to get worse.
Oh, I agree. Especially with all these conferences shrinking now. I mean, the big conferences shrinking down to these huge conferences. At some point you're going to have, two conferences, two divisions, and that's it. Just call it what it is. I mean,
Wait till we're at the NCAA tournament and teams are getting into 500 or below overall.
Yeah.
Because they finished, 11-9 in conference play, even though overall they finished 16-16. Well, I mean, that's going to happen.
Oh,
because there's too many, the competition's too strong, and it's going to make it harder for everybody else. But I didn't realize I was stealing that. I thought I was stealing it from somebody else, so sorry about that.
Oh, that's fine.
At the same point, though, but the Bowden part, too, I mean, I just wonder if it's because Norville's not a big enough coach. Well, it might all just be about Travis, but either way,
yeah,
you know, I don't know. Still very contentious point, I think. The Florida State people are up in arms. Booger McFarland went off. He's an LSU guy. He's not a Florida State guy.
Yeah.
But, you know, a lot of people went off on this. Jay Billis went off. He's a basketball guy, I know, but still, you know, it seems to have turned people the wrong way. And the funny part is, Gino, like you said the other day, and you said it too, Kev, it's not like Texas wasn't deserving. It's not like Alabama isn't deserving. There's just a lot of teams really close. And by criteria, Kevin and I go for the undefeated. Gino, you were leaning toward the four best teams at the moment of who's has the best chance to make it the best game.
Yeah.
And it's crazy. It really is.
It is weird that with five power conferences, the four spots has not caused this much trouble throughout the whole time. You know what I mean? We've had other controversies. But since they went to this four teams, it's amazing with five power conferences that it hasn't come up before this particular year. You know what I mean?
Nope, you're right.
The five other teams, four spots. I mean, it's crazy.
I mean, remember last year, TCU lost in the Big 12 title game, and they got in anyway with the loss. And that was a question if they were going to make it in or not. Yeah. I think they ended up getting a three also last year. They played Michigan and beat them and then played that title game against Georgia, and they got smoked. It was never much of a game, unfortunately, for us trying to watch it. But, yeah, it's college football's – I mean, the 12 thing is a joke. The NIL is making it impossible. The transfer portal is ridiculous. There's a lot not to like about the way college athletics is going right now.
All these conferences merging. It's going to be another mess, you know.
But Saturday, the last pure game in college football.
Army-Navy.
Army-Navy for the first time – ever being played in New England up at Gillette Stadium. So it was the third time they've ever been outside that mid-Atlantic, New Jersey, Philly, D.C. area.
Mm-hmm.
Navy leads 62-54-7 all time. Army, I've got as a three-point favorite.
Yep.
Both teams are 5-6. Army with the win can win the Commander-in-Chief trophy because they beat Air Force earlier this year. Do you want to make a pick?
Sure. Kev, you're leading the way. Kick it off.
Over under, by the way, 27.5. I don't know if that interests you guys.
Oh, this game should go under.
Yeah, I think it's going to go under.
And Army's going to win. This game's going to be a push. Army's going to win by the field goal, 13-10.
I'm going to say 14-10. So I'm going to take Army. I'm going to take Army to lay the wood.
Can I bet on the push?
You can.
I'll take Navy with the points just to be contrary to you guys.
Listen, it might be the smartest bet of all of us because you get the points in a low-scoring game. By the way, the before we get to the NFL picks, just think about the fact that Pittsburgh, New England over under a 30.
Yeah. I had that written down for when we got to our picks.
Exactly. So that's good. I'm sorry, Kevin. I didn't mean to steal the
thunder. Oh, that's okay.
But we have like a bunch of like other bowl games going on, but we don't even know who's going to play in them, so it's not really worth talking about until we know who's going to be playing in.
Yeah. Well, watch our website. You know, Darren will put up on Facebook the games. All three of us will put our prediction for the game, and you can take it or leave it.
We had a pretty good year this year. Let's see what happens.
Last year, we've been better off leaving it.
This year, hopefully, this year is a take it.
And, hey, listen, our college picks were 57%. I mean, we have 57% win percentage. Anybody would take that right now.
Yes.
Go ahead, Kev, sorry.
No, Saturday night, the Heisman Trophy, the four finalists were named. It's Jaden Daniels from LSU, Marvin Harrison Jr., the wide receiver from Ohio State, and then the two guys from the Pac-12 championship game, Bo Nix from Oregon and Michael Penix Jr. from Washington. Probably should be Daniels winning this, shouldn't it be, Darren?
I think Daniels would get my vote. I think Penix and Nix both had fantastic – all four of them had fantastic years. Any one of them could do it. I'll tell you this, though. If the Jets are picking in any kind of position, and I know they need a quarterback and an offensive line, and Marvin Harrison happens to fall, I take him in a heartbeat because I think he's the best actual next-level guy of the four.
Yeah.
But I'm going to say Jaden Daniels wins the Heisman, in my opinion.
I'm gonna take Penix to win this. I think Penix winds up pulling this out. I think it's really close, though. I think the voting gets really close this year.
Good enough. I think it's going to be close, too. I don't think there's a clear cut.
All right. NFL picks time. Week 14 coming aboard. Gino 2-1 last week. You guys were 1-2. Darren leading the way at 24-15. Kevin 19-20. Gino at 14-25. I'm trying to get back over here. We are 57-63 games under 500 through 13 weeks. We need to improve this. Week 14 coming up. I flipped the coin. Darren, you have the honors.
All right. This is I didn't like a lot of games this week. Maybe I'm in the minority.
I didn't like any of these games. I like two games on the board.
I'm going to kick it off. It's going to be a weird one. I'm going to take Cincinnati +1 at home against Indy. I think that I liked what I saw from the kid the other day, another Washington quarterback that used to throw it around all over the place in Brownie. I think Indy's pretty good, but they struggled on the road last week in Tennessee. I think Minshew always finds a way to turn it over. I think Cincinnati's, they got Jamar Chase involved, which is a real big deal for that team. And I think Cincinnati wins the game outright. I don't want the point. I'm kidding, but you know what I mean. I'm going to take the Saints laying 5.5 against the Panthers. Not for any other reason, but the fact that the Panthers suck. The Saints, I think, have to come out angry. They're only a game out of first place. They need to find a way to win this game. They should have more than Carolina has in the bag. Carolina played Tampa kind of close last week. They were home for that. I'm going to go with the Saints. And the third one, I'm taking the Broncos over the Chargers getting 3. I think that the Broncos have been playing well. I know they didn't play well this week. The Chargers' home games aren't really home games. They have no fan support in L.A. That's going to be at least a 60-40, if not 50-50 crowd, Denver and Chargers. And I think that the Broncos can win the game outright by the field goal rather than losing by the field goal. And I think Staley sucks. So I think that he finds a way to lose the game. So I'm going to take the Bengals +1 at home, the Saints -5.5 at home, and the Broncos +3 on the road. Those are my three. All right.
Kev, we'll go to you next.
Yep. My three, the first one, I'm taking the Raiders at home +3 against Minnesota. The Raiders have looked a lot better since the coaching change, and Minnesota is sticking with Josh Dobbs at quarterback, who's a turnover waiting to happen the last few weeks. So I'll take the Raiders at home plus the points. My second game, boy, the way they're clicking on offense, I just don't see this being a game. Miami laying 13 at home against Tennessee. This could easily be a 24 point win for Miami. And my third game, I hate to do this, but I'm going to take Houston -5.5 at the Jets. With the way this offense is going, they're not scoring more than 3 field goals, 9 points, I feel like.
As of right now, it's down to 3.5.
3.5.
Oh, Zach caused a 2-point drop. Wow.
They think Zach is 2 points better than Boyle and Semien.
Wow.
You only have to win by 4 now, Kev.
Yeah.
Jet Muddy's rolling.
They heard Zach was back. Oh, that's it.
Somebody put a 20 on the game.
So those are my 3 picks: Houston, the Raiders, and Miami.
All right. I'm going to start with the Thursday night game. I usually don't go to Thursday night game, but I'm taking Pittsburgh -6 against the Patriots. The Patriots are horrible. Give me New England. If this was more than a touchdown, I may have thought differently, but Pittsburgh -6, they're going to win this by at least 7. Pittsburgh -6 is my first pick.
Even with Mitch.
Yeah, well, listen, we saw New England last week look unbelievably bad. So Ramondre Stevenson definitely not playing again. So
I'm sure you guys saw the stat. New England defense has given up 26 points the last 3 games, 10-10-6, and they're 0-3. Never before done. Or that's not done since, what, 1930?
Their defense is better than the Jet defense, but we rave about the Jets, but the Patriot defense has played well.
Yep.
All right, my second pick is going to be Detroit -3.5 against the Bears. Detroit got the win last week. I think they're trying to get something going in the right direction now. Darren, you took my Saints pick, so I'm not going there. Kev, you took my Texan pick. I'm not going there. So I'm taking the Packers on Monday night. I think they got things going in the right direction, and it's 6.5 against the Giants. I'm taking Green Bay minus the 6.5. So Gino's picks are Green Bay minus 6.5, Detroit minus 3.5, Pittsburgh minus 6. And those are the bonus picks for week 14 NFL.
Bonus pick the under in the Pittsburgh New England game at 30. I think that I'd be stunned if that game goes over. I think it's a thriller waiting to happen on a cold night in Pittsburgh. I can't imagine them putting up a lot of points. Gino thinks that over could happen. I don't think there's any chance.
16-3 Pittsburgh.
I think that's high. I think it's going to be 10-0.
So the game of the week, Cowboys Eagles. What do you guys think of that one? Just in general, not even necessarily picking the game.
I think the Eagles are going to find a way to win it. I think that the Cowboys have to prove that they can be the good team. And I don't consider that team to be the Seattle Seahawks. I think that Philly has kind of been, living rent-free in Dallas's head for a few couple of years now. And I think that they're going to continue. I think Philly wins it. I was a little nervous about betting it because it was actually one of the games on my sheet that I had down there if I didn't get to go first. And you guys took some of my games. So it was on there. I think Philly wins it. G?
Yeah, I have a feeling Philly comes out and plays a good game after last week. I don't think a lot of those guys were happy about the results of that game last week. I will tell you this. If Philadelphia is going to not come out and stop the pass at all like last week, Dallas is going to put some points up. I'm not saying Philly's not going to win, but Dallas is going to put a lot of points up on that board. Could this be 27-24? I have a feeling that's kind of what we're looking at. I do like Philly, though, and I actually like Philly plus the 3.5 a lot. Kev, what do you think?
I actually like Dallas. I think they're coming with a mini bye. They played last Thursday night. I mean, you look, since the bye week, Philly's last three games, they've played at Kansas City, Buffalo, and San Fran. Now they're playing Dallas. The week before the bye week was Dallas. I mean, this is just the end of not even so much the end because they still have to travel to Seattle next week as right. well. Never an easy place. So Philly's in the middle of just a brutal stretch here.
Yeah.
I think Dallas is going to exercise some demons. It was only a 5-point game last time. I think Dallas finds a way to win this game.
The one really thing good. Is that Philly played three games in 13 days also. Yep. They really had a... It was a real rough stretch with the way that the scheduling worked out for them. They played three good teams, basically all in short weeks, so to speak. They get a full week to rest. I mean, Dallas is playing well. And, listen, Dak's got a clicking. CeeDee Lamb has become probably the premier receiver in the league at this moment. I'm not saying he is, but right now he's putting up the best stats of any receiver in the league. I'm glad I traded him in fantasy. So now it's like, if Philly can't get we're going to see if Philly can't get the running game going because they're going to need to loosen it up for Smith and for Brown. That's the key for them. And get Goddard back.
Yep.
Two games Monday night, Dolphins, Titans, Packers, Giants. Kev, what broadcast are you watching?
I'm probably watching the Manning cast. One's on ABC, one's on ESPN. Manning cast is actually going to show both games simultaneously and have the Mannings talk about them. Really depends. Whether or not I watch Manning cast really depends on what I'm doing with the game. If I've got the game out in the background, I'm doing some other stuff, I'm probably listening to Buck and Aikman do the game because I want to hear what's going on, and they're going to call the play-by-play of the game. If I'm sitting down watching the game and able to see what's going on myself, I'll put on the Manning cast because I like to see Peyton and Eli's reactions. I mean, they're funny. There are times when Peyton will put up the little sign. He'll go to his little in-house football field downstairs in his basement and draw things out. He's got some kids in there to help run the plays. So, I mean, it's a fun thing to watch. But like I said, if I'm trying to do something else and listen to the game, they're not giving me play by play. So that's how I make the determination. But since they're going to be playing or watching both games simultaneously, I'm going to watch the Manning cast Monday.
Okay. I kind of go the opposite way. If I'm really into the game and I want to watch what's going on, I'm usually watching the Channel 7 broadcast. If I'm doing other things, I kind of like hearing the Mannings kind of go back and forth and talk about the game as it's going on. I don't necessarily need that play-by-play, and I can still get the feel for the game. I will tell you, though, I do agree with you. With two games on, I probably will put the Mannings on because they'll probably be talking simultaneously about both games, and that'll probably be interesting to see them as they're reacting to not just one game but two games going on. Darren, what do you think?
The fact that they start them at the same time is stupid. First and foremost, bagger them by an hour. Do 7 and 8:15. I don't know what they're doing. Number two, I'm going to watch the Giant game. So I'll probably just watch the Giant Packer game. I hate the Dolphins. I have no interest in watching them blow out the Titans. But at the same time, I've never watched the Manning cast. I've heard people say good things about it. I probably should tune in and see what it's all about. I've never watched a second of it.
It's not bad. You listen, if you are trying, if it's a game that you really want to get into, you're probably not going to like it.
Yeah.
But it's a good watch. It's a fun watch. I like when they have a guest on with them. That adds something to the mix sometimes. So it's a pretty good watch, Darren. You really need to give it a chance at least once.
I'll tune in because there'll be two games on at once. The fact that they don't stagger these games is pathetic.
Oh, it's ridiculous. Yeah. Monday night. Like you said, 30 minutes apart, at least. That's all. 30 minutes. So when one's going to half, the other game's still playing, at least.
Just dumb.
Yeah.
Just dumb. So you guys have anything else before we wrap this fun one up here?
Nope.
Okay, we are the Sports Kings from Queens. Darren here with Gino, here with Kevin, talking about the wonderful and wild world of sports. Please download the podcast. Any way you can get your podcast, whether it be, TuneIn, whether it be Spotify, whether it be an Apple product, however you want to get it. We post on social media. Please like, follow, ask us questions, respond, share. Please share as much as you possibly can, as we always try to grow listenership as much as possible. And without any further ado, and hopefully we'll be talking about Soto coming here soon, may your sports be with you.